Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Brady Phillips. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Tara. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining this edition of our monthly climate update call, which is part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision making. Again, I'm Brady Phillips with NOAA Communications in Washington, D.C., also Silver Spring, Maryland today, and I'll be facilitating the call. Today's update will feature three short presentations by some of our climate and meteorologists, and followed by an operator-assisted question-and-answer session. Today, we'll be following along a presentation that our speakers will speak to, and that can be downloaded at http://www.ncdcnoaa.gov/SOTC/briefings. That's B-R-I-E-F-I-N-G-S. First presenter is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information in Asheville, North Carolina. We'll provide a summary of the June U.S. and global climate reports and the drought monitor released today. Next presenter is Laura Edwards, and she is the South Dakota State climatologist based at South Dakota State University. The final presenter is Dan Collins, a meteorologist and seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center in College Park, Maryland. We'll provide the latest ENSO or El Nino update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the coming 3 months. That's through October. Our first speaker will be Jake Crouch from NOAA. Jake?
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I want to start off speaking to slide number 2 on the slide deck you can download from our website. Speaking to June 2017 global temperatures, this report was released yesterday morning. Looking at the global temperatures for the month of June, the average temperature for land and ocean surfaces was 0.82 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average. And this ranked as the third warmest June on record, behind June 2015 and June 2016. This does mark the 41st consecutive June and the 390th consecutive month that we've had global temperatures above the 20th century average. When we break it down and look at land and ocean surfaces separately, the land surfaces saw their fourth warmest June, while the ocean surface saw its third warmest June. Looking at the map on the right, we can see that large areas of the globe were warmer than average. We see some record warmth in the North Atlantic, as well as Western Europe, where a significant heat wave impacted the western part of the continent in the middle and late part of the month. Several countries had record and near-record warm June temperatures, including Spain and the Netherlands that were record warm. France, Switzerland, and Austria all had their second warmest June. We did have some areas of the globe that were cooler than average, notably in the North Atlantic. This area of below-average sea surface temperatures is pretty noteworthy and has been present for several months now. And we also had large areas of western Russia stretching into eastern Scandinavia that were colder than average during the month of June. Moving on to slide number 3 to speak to January through June temperatures for 2017. The graphic shows year-to-date temperatures for 2017 in black and the ultimate 8 warmest years for the globe in all of the other colors. And as you follow the graphic from left to right, we are accumulating months. So January, then January through February temperatures, and then you can see the black line for 2017 with global temperatures January through June. The January through June global temperature was 0.91 degrees Celsius above average, and this was the second warmest year to date on record for the globe, behind the record set in 2016, but warmer than 2015. So we can see that so far for 2017, we're pretty comfortably in second place. As we move into the rest of the year, we could drop to a third warmest, but we're still quite a bit above the pack in terms of what we've seen in the past, and quite a bit warmer than most of the years in our period of record, except for 2016 and 2015. Moving on to speak to what happened here in the U.S. during the month of June, The contiguous U.S. average temperature was 70.3 degrees Fahrenheit. That was 1.9 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this was our 20th warmest June on record. The graphic on the left shows how those temperatures shaped up across the U.S. We noticed that much of the Southwest was record and near record warm. We had a significant heat wave impact that part of the country in mid-month, with several locations, including Las Vegas and Phoenix, approaching near all-time record high temperatures during that heat wave. Arizona did see record high daytime temperatures for the month of June. Contrary to the warmth in the West, large areas of the Southeast was cooler than average, stretching from the deep South to the Ohio Valley. This part of the U.S. did see above-average precipitation, with that precipitation tending to suppress daytime highs. The contiguous U.S. precipitation total for June was right about average. That above-average precipitation that we saw in the Southeast was counterbalanced by below-average precipitation across the northern and central plains, as well as the Southwest. Large areas of the Southwest didn't receive any precipitation during the month of June, but this is typical for this part of this time of the year. And you notice on the map on the right, the large area of the northern and central plains that saw record and near record low precipitation totals during the month of June, and Laura will speak to that more in a moment. Moving on to slide number 5 to look at the year-to-date for the contiguous U.S., the average temperature for the lower 48 was 3.4 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and we're still in the second warmest place for the year-to-date for the first 6 months of the year. The graphic on the left shows how those temperatures broke down during the first 6 months of the year. We did see record and near-record warmth stretching from the Southwest through the Southern Plains and into the Southeast and Mid-Atlantic. Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina have all seen their warmest year-to-date on record. The only part of the contiguous U.S. that saw cooler-than-average conditions for the first part of the year were parts of the Pacific Northwest, particularly eastern parts of Washington State. In terms of precipitation, the contiguous U.S. precipitation total for the year-to-date was 2.55 inches above average, and this was the sixth wettest January through June on record. We saw significant precipitation and above-average precipitation across large areas of the West, as well as the Great Lakes, and from the Central Plains stretching into the Southeast. Idaho and Michigan were both record wet for the year-to-date. And the one dry spot in the contiguous U.S. sticking out is the Northern Plains, with record and near-record low precipitation totals in that part of the country. It is interesting to note that we've seen our second warmest year-to-date so far and our sixth wettest year-to-date. Typically, when we have really warm years for the lower 48, we were experiencing drought, a large-scale drought over a large part of the country, and that isn't the case in 2017 so far. We've had a fairly wet year with the exception of what's happening in the Northern Plains. Moving on to my final slide, slide number 6, to speak to the U.S. drought monitor that was released this morning. 10.6% of the contiguous U.S. is in drought, and this is up more than 5% since late May. We did see drought improvement across large areas of the Southeast, especially in Florida and southern Georgia. And we did see that drought degradation across the northern to central plains, parts of the Southwest, as well as parts of the southern plains that missed out on that precipitation earlier in the year. And outside of the contiguous U.S., we saw drought expand in both Hawaii and Alaska. And with that, I will pass it off to Laura.
Okay, thank you, Jake. Again, I'm Laura Edwards. I'm the state climatologist for South Dakota, and I'm based out of Aberdeen in the northeast part of the state, an extension regional center up here. And Jake has set the stage pretty well to tell the story of drought in this region, as it's primarily been a short-term drought. Looking at slide number 7, you can see the current drought monitor for the Northern Plains region, and that D4 exceptional drought was newly introduced in today's map. But also looking at that table on the right, you can see that 3 months ago, just about 4% of this six-state region was in drought, where now we're in 35% of the region now in drought. And looking at the three states of Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota, at individual state basis, Montana is 45% in drought, North Dakota at 74%, and now South Dakota at 82%. So this has really grown quickly over just this warm season. In much of this region, this is the worst drought since probably 2006 or 2002. So it's been over a decade, really, since we've seen a drought of this magnitude in this region. And at this time, it's primarily an agricultural drought. We have seen very few water restrictions in place as far as city water goes and lawns and household use. But also in this area, there's very little irrigation to kind of mitigate or make up for the dry precipitation record we've seen over the last few months. So that's partly why there's been quite dramatic or significant impacts in the agricultural sector in this region. And most of my slides will focus on that. Looking at slide number 8, this is from USDA, and they update this every week as well with each issuance of the U.S. Drought Monitor, and that link is down there at the bottom, where they take the primary commodities and overlay the areas that are indicated in drought on the Drought Monitor. So there on this slide, this is the spring wheat area, and I chose this because it's particularly hit the northern plains. Almost 75% of the spring wheat produced in the U.S. is in the Dakotas and Montana, and that red shaded area is the area in drought currently. And you can see on the graph there on the inset, 95% of South Dakota's spring wheat crop is in drought of some level. Also in North Dakota, 64%, in Montana, about 58% of their spring wheat crop is in drought, totaling, you know, about half of it nationally. And looking at now slide 9, I use the same data to kind of gather a table of some of the major agricultural commodities in the three-state region. And looking at corn, soybean, spring wheat, hay, and cattle. These have all been substantially or significantly impacted in the drought area. And so going across on the table, first of all, in corn, now 75% of the corn-growing area in South Dakota is in some level of drought on the Drought Monitor. In North Dakota, 59% of the corn-growing region in that state is in drought, which only amounts to 13% on the right there on the national scale, as we are in the far western side of the corn-growing region. Similar numbers for soybeans. That growing area, that region of the U.S. is pretty similar to corn. So we see similar numbers there, but we really see spring wheat, hay, and cattle really taking a hit in the Dakotas and Montana, especially North Dakota, hay and cattle, about 91%. Each of those commodities are in some level of drought. And those pictures down at the bottom of the slide are from Tripp County, South Dakota, down the south central part of the state, taken by a producer a couple weeks ago. Going to slide number 10, I also wanted to show on the graph there, this is also from USDA, taking the National Ag Statistics reports from each week, looking at the crop condition. This is just an example from corn. Soybeans is very similar, but you see the red line there in 2017, the current year. Corn currently trending worse condition than 2012, 2002, 2006, other previous drought years in the state of South Dakota. And you see the high point there at 2008 at the top right of that graph. So certainly the corn and soybean crops are going to be affected by the drought situation. Also on the right, a couple pictures of a real unusual event happened back on June 25th in the north central part of South Dakota, south central part of North Dakota, so right along the Missouri River area there. A frost event damaged some corn up in that region, which is something we can see in a drought situation where you have very dry air that can cool rapidly, well, and heat rapidly, but cause some frost damage there in corn really late in the season. Also, I just wanted to mention now in this region, corn is at tasseling stage, a very water-intensive stage for corn. It needs about a third of an inch a day at this point in its growing season, the highest of any other time in its lifetime. And drought and heat stress at this time can amount to about 8% per day yield loss up here. So having drought right now at this time in July is really challenging for corn especially. And then lastly, slide 11, I just wanted to share that on the afternoons, the same third Thursday of each month, we have a webinar tailored to the Plains and Midwest region, kind of the central states from Montana all the way to Ohio, down to Missouri or so. This is coordinated mostly by NOAA and the National Integrated Drought Information System. But there is a link where you can sign up to register for those updates. And you can also see the recordings as well at both the High Plains Regional Climate Center and the Midwest Regional Climate Center. And with that, I will pass it off to Dan.
All right. Thank you, Laura. Just a reminder, this is Dan Collins. I'm with NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, and I'm one of the seasonal forecasters, as well as a meteorologist. So I'm going to begin with slide number 12, and this takes a look at the global sea surface temperatures, as well as the state of ENSO, that's the El Niño Southern Oscillation, the oscillation between states of El Niño and La Niña in the tropical Pacific. So looking first at the image in the upper left of the slide, that's the sea surface temperature anomalies for the previous 4 weeks. It shows whether the temperatures were above normal in red shades or below normal in blue shades for this 4 week period. You can see that there are above normal sea surface temperatures in the central tropical Pacific right there about the dateline at 180 degrees west longitude. And to the east of that as well. You can see that there are above normal temperatures also in mid-latitudes, greater above normal temperatures in mid-latitudes across the Pacific Ocean from Asia to North America, as well as off of the Atlantic coast of the United States. There are above normal temperatures exceeding 2 degrees above normal. These anomalies are in Celsius. ENSO neutral conditions are present. The anomalies in the central tropical Pacific exceed a half degree Celsius threshold that we consider as possible El Niño conditions. However, the atmospheric conditions above these sea surface temperatures do not indicate that we have an El Niño. So what we call this is neutral ENSO. Looking at the ENSO forecast, I'm looking at the image in the lower left. This is the consensus for CPC, that's the Climate Prediction Center, and IRI is the International Research Institute. This shows probabilities of having either El Niño in red, those are the probabilities in red, or in blue for La Niña, or the green indicates the probability of ENSO neutral conditions, which we currently have. So the forecast is that there is a greater than 50% chance that we'll maintain the ENSO neutral conditions through the winter, that is into February, March, and April of 2018. So probabilities for neutral conditions are maintained above 50% throughout the period of this forecast. You can see that at the beginning of the forecast, there's a higher probability for El Niño conditions, that is higher than usual, but still less than neutral conditions. There's a probability somewhere around 45% initially in the first season, and then as we proceed, the probability of El Niño conditions decreases. The forecast is indicating, in other words, that the chance of going into and developing in El Nino is decreasing over time as we go through the forecast period. However, it is elevated given the above normal sea surface temperatures in the Central Pacific currently. So the chances of El Nino development decrease to 35% or less as we go forward past the winter months. Now I'm moving on to slide number 13. This shows the monthly forecast for August. This was released this morning from the Climate Prediction Center. On the left, you see probabilities for temperatures for August on average to be above normal in red shades. If there were areas that were indicated as likely to be below normal, that would be in blue shades. The map indicates that most areas of the United States, including Alaska, are more likely to experience above normal temperatures through the month of August on average. It does indicate in the Southwest an area of EC, standing for equal chances. That simply means that we don't have a clear signal, a clear indication that temperatures should be either above or below normal and that those are equally likely. Temperatures are most likely to be above normal for the month of August in areas of the northern CONUS in the west. Sorry, this is the northern United States, I mean, in the west from the Pacific Northwest across into the Central Plains, and there over the areas of North and South Dakota and Montana, you can see that there is a greater than a 50% probability that temperatures will be above normal for that region. Temperatures are also likely to be above normal. You can see in Alaska, probabilities also exceed 50% for a fairly large region of western Alaska. Looking at the image on the right, we see the probabilities for precipitation for the month of August to be either above normal, or if brown shades were indicated, that would indicate areas where it was likely that the precipitation would be below the normal for August. There are only areas indicated in green for above normal precipitation. That's in the southwest United States. You see probabilities of precipitation being above normal exceeding 40% probability. I should note that we separate the precipitation into three possible categories: above normal, below normal, and near normal, and that's the same for temperature. So as three categories, that means that anything exceeding one-third or 33% is more likely than usual. So we see areas where above normal is more likely than normal in the monsoon region in the southwest. We also see an area in western Alaska where above normal precipitation is more likely than normal. Most of the U.S. is indicated as equal chances. That's where the EC is indicated. This means, again, that there is no clear picture as to whether or not above normal or below normal precipitation is more likely or whether near normal is likely. It simply indicates that we don't have a clear signal or tilt in the odds either way. I'm going to move now to slide number 14. This is the seasonal forecast. So this covers the period August, September, and October, the three-month period, and indicates whether the temperatures or precipitation are likely to be above the averages for the August, September, October period or below the averages for the August, September, October period. On the left, you see the probabilities for temperature. Red shades indicate that the probability is more likely to be above normal, and if there were blue shades, that would indicate that temperatures for the three-month period are more likely to be below normal. However, you can see that across the entire United States, including Alaska, there is more of a chance that temperatures will be above normal than that temperatures will be below normal. These probabilities exceed 50% in several regions of the U.S., including the northern western part of the U.S., northern Rockies, into parts of the Plains and Intermountain West. You can also see that the probabilities exceed 50% along the Gulf Coast and up the Atlantic coast and into the Northeast. you can see that the probabilities are less than 40%, and therefore only a slight tilt in the odds towards above normal in regions stretching from eastern New Mexico, Texas, into parts of the Central Plains and then the Central Mississippi Valley. Alaska also is indicated for the three-month period, as it was for the monthly outlook, to be likely above normal temperatures. In the image on the right, we look at the probability that precipitation will be above normal or below normal. The green areas indicating above normal precipitation is more likely are once again indicated for the southwest region where the monsoon is expected to be active, as well as an additional area from Texas extending towards the Mississippi Valley. We also see an indication for more likely below normal precipitation in the Pacific Northwest in parts of Oregon and Washington State. And we see that above normal precipitation is more likely for parts of southwest Alaska and the Alaskan Panhandle. Now moving to slide number 15. This is the U.S. drought outlook. So this is based on the drought monitor that you saw earlier in previous slides. So this indicates whether there is a tendency for areas that are currently in drought to either persist or expand, or whether drought improvement is possible in the tan shades, or in the green shades, whether drought removal is expected for the coming three-month period. So you see there in the Northern Plains, for instance, the area of brown indicates that drought there is expected to persist during the next 3 months. As we saw in the seasonal outlooks, temperatures are expected to be above normal. There is no tilt in the odds for precipitation to receive more precipitation than normal or to receive less precipitation than normal. However, the temperatures are expected to persist as above normal. Another factor that plays into whether the drought will persist or not is what are the short-term precipitation and temperature forecasts. In the short term, to the east, there is expected to be some precipitation. Therefore, parts of eastern regions of the Dakotas are indicated to have either improvement or in some cases where the drought is less severe on the eastern edge of the drought, drought removal is most likely. You can also see scattered areas of drought across the southwest and southern plains where climatologically there's precipitation at this time of year, as well as the forecasts indicating for parts of those regions that precipitation is likely to be above normal. So once again, drought removal is likely in those areas which are experiencing less severe drought. In parts of California and western Arizona, drought is likely to persist because climatologically there's very little precipitation that occurs at this time of year. Therefore, the drought is likely to persist. On the other hand, you can see in western Montana, there's an area of drought development likely. Again, forecasts tilt towards below normal precipitation in that region, as well as above normal temperatures. And from there, I'll turn the call back on to Brady.
Thank you, Dan. We'll now take specific questions from the call participants. And again, please be sure to clearly indicate who you'd like to answer the question, if possible. And as a reminder, if you are a reporter and taking notes, please put your phone on mute if you're actively typing away. I had some comments that it ruins the audio for others who need it for radio and others if you're typing over the answer. So, operator, can you please remind the participants as to how they can ask a question and queue up the first call? Thanks.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly. If you need to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. It will take a few moments for the questions to come through. Please stand by. Our first question comes from Kit Stoltz with Ventura County Reporter. Your line is open.
Hi, for Jake, please. Jake, you mentioned that we had a record or near record warmth in the Southwest, despite the fact that the drought for most of us is over. Can you expand on that? Are there any local conditions that could have brought in record warmth?
Hi, this is Jake. We did see some ridging across parts of the Southwest, so that's, you know, natural variability within the system. You know, this time of year is already hot in the Southwest, so having, conditions that favor even hotter outcomes, you know, it really has impacts on human health and other sectors in the region. So it seems to be more of a weather phenomenon, local and regional drivers that drove the warmth in the Southwest during June.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Evan Duffy with AccuWeather. Your line is open.
Thank you. This question is for Dan. Dan, I was just curious, we see that you guys have gone out with above normal precipitation with an enhanced monsoon in the Southwest. And the EC temperature area in August corresponds pretty tightly with that, obviously. However, when we get into the August, September, October, temperature anomalies across the Southwest are looking rather above normal, despite the presence of above normal monsoonal conditions. I was just wondering where the above normal warmth was going to come from if it wasn't in August, and we maintain that monsoon through September and October. I was kind of wondering what the thinking was there.
Okay, thank you. So this is Dan Collins again from the NOAA Climate Prediction Center. For the forecast for above normal precipitation for the monsoon region, it's actually a signal that's primarily in August. August has a greater amount of precipitation than September and October, so it plays a bit of a greater role in terms of the seasonal total for the monsoon region. So The greatest signal that we have is coming in terms of above normal precipitation for that region in August. That extends into August, September, October monsoon totals, largely because it plays a significant role in the total for the region. In terms of the feedback to temperature, the precipitation outlook is primarily for above normal in August, therefore that has an impact on the temperature and moderates temperatures in the Southwest such that we've put equal chances for August, the month of August. That is, neither above normal or below normal is favored. Long-term trends, decadal variations, that is, in which the most recent decade is warmer than the past three decades that we use as our reference period, would indicate that above normal temperatures are likely for that region in the Southwest. And that's true especially for August, September, October. Trends are fairly significant in that region as a factor in the seasonal variations. And therefore, if it were not for the active monsoon, we would likely be showing a higher probability of above normal temperatures for August, September, and October. And in fact, the reduction in probabilities, the probabilities simply being about 40% or in some parts of that region, less than 40% for above normal temperatures, is an indication that the precipitation will moderate those temperatures in that region.
All right, thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. One moment. We do have a question coming through. One moment, please. The next question comes from Laura Gegel with LicenseScience.com, LiveScience.com. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I have two questions. The first is for Laura Edwards. I was wondering if the drought in the farming areas might affect food prices later on, if you have knowledge of that. And then my second question is for Dan Collins. If you can just talk more about the science behind the above temperatures that you're predicting, that would be great so I can explain it to readers.
Okay, this is Laura Edwards. I'll take a stab at that question first. So I'm not an economist, and I think already we've seen some changes in the market price for wheat. But as far as corn and soybeans go, it's a relatively small part of the Corn Belt area that's affected in drought right now. As far as the cattle, you know, beef prices go, that I don't know so much about, and I'd have to follow up with you afterwards with some folks to visit with about that.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is Dan Collins with once again with NOAA Climate Prediction Center. So as to the temperature outlook for the month of August, the higher probabilities are there over the northern central U.S. That's a result of a pattern of increased ridging in the atmosphere, which what that means is the circulation of the atmosphere is such that there is higher pressure in that region expected for the month of August. This is the outlook that's coming up for the end of July, and it's expected to some extent to persist into at least the beginning of August. So that leads to above normal temperatures, especially in that region. Overall, for both the August outlook and the August, September, and October seasonal outlook, the long-term trends do play a significant factor in this particular season. So that is that the most recent decade is somewhat warmer than the previous three decades from 1981 to 2010 that we use as a reference period. And therefore, the trends as they are for August, September, and October, as I said, are a significant factor relative to the variations that we typically see for this season. So those play a particular role in the western United States where we have greater than 50% probability for above normal. They also play a role in the monsoon region in the southwest. They're quite significant there. If it were not for the fact that we expect, at least initially in the season, to have above normal precipitation, we would have greater probabilities for above normal temperatures for the season also in that region. And then the trends also are a significant factor along the coasts of the Gulf and along the Atlantic coast and in the northeast, as well as for Alaska. For Alaska, the trends are quite significant at this time of year. In the later part of this season, the ice should begin to expand climatologically. That is, the sea ice should expand around Alaska, and there is a sharp trend in sea ice, so there should be less sea ice than would have been in past decades in the region around Alaska during the later part of the season, and that would lead to above normal temperatures in that region. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. One moment, please. I show no further questions at this time.
All right, thank you. Barring no immediate request for a question, I will begin by wrapping up the call. And again, first, thank you to all of our speakers for their time and for everyone else for participating in the call today. And I will end by reminding you of some calendars items for some upcoming releases. So the July U.S. Climate Highlights will be released on August 8th. And the July Global Climate Highlights will be released on August 17th. And also on that same date, August 17th, will be our next monthly climate call. Right now, we are also anticipating releasing our State of the Climate in 2016 report. So that's our annual report published as a special edition of the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. On August 10th, a separate media advisory will be put out for that event when we confirm the date. And finally, NOAA will provide an update to the 2017 Atlantic Hurricane Outlook on August 9th during a media teleconference. An audio of this call will be posted on the NOAA Media Advisory on NOAA.gov within about 90 minutes. And in the meanwhile, if you do have further questions or informational needs, please email me at brady.phillips, that's brady.phillips at NOAA.gov, or 202-407-1298. And I'd be happy to help you with your information needs. This concludes the call. Thank you. Goodbye.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please allow a few moments of silence and stand by for your post-conference.